Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of February 17th, 2017. Today we're joined by our frequent guest, the prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing, D.R.?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Very well. I was going to introduce you as Comrade Tuckerinsky, but I figured that would not be, that would be a low blow. That would be fake. Mm-hmm. Anyway, D.R., as usual, given our hyperkinetic chief executive, there's so much craziness going on. Before we dive into some of the stuff, I want to remind everyone that the MCAN conference is at Northeastern University on March 5th. There'll be great opportunities to network, talk to people, learn stuff. If you want to sign up, the registration is cheap. You can go to the website localenvironmentalaction.org, all one word. Boom, you're in there and you can show up. It'll be a good thing. So DR, let's start right off the top of the pile with breaking news, which is happening and could all be over before the ink is dried on this podcast. But it turns out that a guy named Scott Pruitt, who is generally considered completely antithetical to the purposes of the EPA, has been nominated to be its administrator. Mm-hmm. And as part of the back and forth on having him be examined by the Senate, I guess there was a demand that some large number of emails, emails get released. And it turns out within the last few hours, finally, the judges ordered this large set of emails, which I guess Pruitt has been protecting, has finally ordered those to be released, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear about that?
Yes, a Politico reported that a state judge in Oklahoma ordered Pruitt to release by next Tuesday thousands of emails exchanged with the fossil fuel industry during his tenure at state attorney general. Of course, that deadline comes after the vote that is scheduled to confirm Pruitt as the next EPA administrator.
Which would be Friday noontime, Friday the 17th, I guess. Yeah, Friday the 17th.
Exactly. Those senators who are opposed to Pruitt becoming the next EPA administrator are pushing for a delay, although it's not expected that they will get such a delay. And, you know, it's just a shame, the sort of potential scenario where, despite obvious evidence of lack of qualification for the job, you know, Pruitt could be sort of like the male Betsy DeVos, where he basically gets in there, you know, despite the growing amount of, you know, public demand that he not get that job. Mm. We recall how the public demand, the large public demand against Betsy DeVos, and yet she still got confirmed, and we could have a similar situation here with Pruitt.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can say is if you are in a state with a Republican senator, call up that senator by noontime Friday the 17th and tell them to vote against Pruitt. That's where we're headed. Depressing. I guess the other... So let's talk about the depressing stuff first. We'll try and talk about the more pleasant things later on in the podcast. The other interesting and signifying thing is that the president... One of the first bills the president signed was a bill to reduce the transparency of foreign dealings by oil companies, specifically that the oil companies did not have to report effectively when they paid a bribe to some local strongman in order to extract oil from that land, right? I mean, it's a cover-up for corruption. Did you see that one?
Yes, Trump signed into law what I would call a dictator defense bill that Congress passed as part of the Congressional Review Act, essentially this sort of 1996 law from the Newt Gingrich era of Congress, which the current era of Congress is using to try to gut regulations that the Obama administration implemented during the last, I believe, 6 months of the Obama administration. And yes, they will. The bill voids a Securities and Exchange Commission regulation that would have, as you know, required oil and gas and mining companies to disclose in detail the payments they made to foreign governments. This was a policy, an SEC policy, that Rex Tillerson, the new Secretary of State and former El Jefe of ExxonMobil, was dead set against, and apparently he got his wish. Didn't
he? I mean, it so transparently, so to speak. I don't know. I mean, it's so there's that. Okay. I guess the other two sort of downbeat things is that, of course, the Dakota Access Pipeline judge rejected the tribe's request to stop the construction. And I think, DR, you just said, what did you say about Keystone XL?
Yes. TransCanada, the parent company of the Keystone XL pipeline, has reportedly filed for an approval for a Nebraska route for the Keystone XL pipeline. Obviously, you know, President Trump signed an executive order, basically trying to sort of grease the skids for the eventual construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. And TransCanada is apparently going all in. Obviously, as we've noted before, there's still going to be tremendous public backlash and tremendous court battles. But obviously, this is going to be a dogfight, the fight that everybody thought ended when Obama, you know, said no KXL. Now you have Trump saying yes KXL, and again the people are going to be back out on the streets, back protesting, back into the courts, fighting once again. And you know, again, nevertheless, those who oppose the Keystone XL pipeline will persist in making sure this project never sees the light of day.
You beat me to that one. I was going to say they persisted. Still, they persisted. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that it is a place that this kind of news does clarify the stakes. And I think kind of one of the issues is many of these things seem far away and hard to manage, right? The Dakota Access Pipeline, the Keystone XL. There are links, right? There's Bold Nebraska that's going to be fighting the Keystone XL pipeline. There are various groups of Standing Rock. And of course, the big opposition now to the Dakota Access Pipeline is through the banks, right?
Yes,
I guess Seattle and Colorado, some places in Colorado, pulled out of Wells Fargo, which is trying to finance the Dakota Access Pipeline. I mean, that's where the battle moves, because that's the most logical place. And I think that's where individuals who might be listening to this podcast can find some place to take action. Right? There's lots of, but I mean, finding those groups that are opposing these things, these pipelines, and supporting them again, since we're back into the fray with the whole thing, that's something you can do. Right?
And the irony that the company that's building the Dakota Access Pipeline is named Energy Transfer Partners. The irony is, of course, that what they are doing is preventing our transfer to clean energy.
Right.
And that's something that, again, has to be resisted.
So I guess, though, the flip side is, with all this stuff, very depressing stuff happening at the federal level, there are activities here at the state level. And, of course, we're most familiar with what's going on here in New England and Massachusetts. But there are pushbacks. There are things happening which will persist after the Donald is gone. Right? And so I would point out that there's, I mean, one of the things that I saw was that recently, Senator Jamie Eldridge has introduced into the Massachusetts state legislature a bill called the 100% Clean Energy Bill that essentially calls for the state to generate all of its electricity from renewables by something like 2030 and to be completely off fossil fuels. Of course, here in New England, many people heat their homes with oil heat, right? The classic sort of funky thing that ended up here. But to by 2035 or 2040, to have all that residential fossil fuel use be replaced, right? Did you see anything about that, Bill?
Yes, and according to Yale Environment, it has 53 co-sponsors and bipartisan support. You know, would that you could get that sort of stuff in the U.S. Congress. It, as you noted, it was introduced in the Senate by Senator Jamie Eldridge and in the House by Representatives Sean Garbally and Marjorie Decker. And basically this bill, as we've discussed before, this is the sort of effort that Massachusetts has to do in order to maintain its leadership on clean energy. We can't let California eat our lunch, so to speak. And considering the level of inaction that's taking place on the federal level, the states have to step up. This is similar to a piece that David Roberts recently wrote in Vox about how, you know, at a state level, clean energy is not a partisan issue. Both mm-hmm. people on the right and people on the left like clean energy. And obviously, you know, the fact that there is bipartisan support for this bill in Massachusetts is a great sign. And hopefully it is a bill that will become law and it will allow Massachusetts to do what the
needs
current
to be done.
Do what the current federal administration absolutely refuses to do. This is the sort of thing that can be a model that can be replicated in other states. You know, what gets blocked on a federal level can get replicated in the states. And as more and more states push for such bills, eventually you're going to see unbearable pressure come down on Congress to once and for all, you know, lead.
And I think that the this kind of bill is a great example of something that is pretty clear cut. And something that you can call your state representative about. I mean, mm-hmm. not everyone knows exactly who their state representative or state senator is, but the state mm-hmm. representative tends to be very close to the district that he or she represents, right? They mm-hmm. are state representatives are close to the people. They're gonna be available. Write them a letter. They oftentimes at the senior center, right? They'll be there of 9 o'clock of a Tuesday morning, entertaining mm-hmm. people to try and learn what's going on. It's not that big a deal to go talk to them. This is a clear example. You can go in and say, "I like this bill. Please vote for mm-hmm. it," and you don't have to justify anything else. Mm-hmm. it's a place that you can go do something. And I guess I would say, while I'm thinking of it, DR, this coming week. So this is now we're heading into February 17th, I guess the U.S. Congress is in recess for the week or so, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I've heard lots of people probably heard lots of stories about the pushback on the Affordable Care Act that all of a sudden some Republican GOP congressmen are getting an earful about mm-hmm. about their plans. But this is an opportunity to go visit your congressman, whether he is a diehard Democrat or a Republican, and make the mm-hmm. case for clean energy. Just tell them it's important exactly. to you, right? And exactly. they want you to go in. All you have to do is, again, it's on the, I can put it on the blog, right? Figure out who mm-hmm. your rep is, go to their Facebook page, look at their website, and they'll say when they're having an open house. So, boy, mm-hmm. that's an easy thing to do, right?
To quote the man that Donald Trump professes to admire, power concedes nothing without a demand.
I'm so glad. I hope he gets to meet him. Turns out that the Chevy Bolt, the electric vehicle made by Chevy, is now, in the showrooms. And I saw a post on Facebook where they were trying to send people to a dealership south of Boston for a test drive. So mm-hmm. if you're at all interested in driving the Bolt, which is a U.S.-made long-range electric vehicle, it's now available. You should go mm-hmm. drive it just for the fun of it. And it's a good sign. I mean, it's a sign mm-hmm. that this stuff is happening. I mean, there was a thing I heard on the radio that said Kansas City. Did you hear this on WGBH or something? Mm-hmm. Kansas City, the utility is putting in 1,000 electric vehicle charging stations.
I think I heard something to that effect. It was also a report in Clean Technica, Kansas City Power and Light installing 1,000 EV charging stations. And again, very, very, very interesting that this is occurring in a part of the country where, again, you don't associate the politics with green or anything in terms of clean energy, but yet it's happening. And again, this is something, you know, this goes back to the argument that I believe former President Obama made right before he left, where he talked about how clean energy is now unstoppable, that mm-hmm. the trends mm-hmm. are now unstoppable. And even though certain trends can be slowed down, nevertheless, you see how innovation is winning out. NPR noted that Kansas City Power and Light services, their service area straddles the Kansas-Missouri border. Right. So you have two states whose politics are sort of dominated by deniers. Kansas, obviously, you know, where the Koch brothers sort of do their thing. And yet, even in the heart of Koch country, even, you know, Missouri, the state that gave us Rush Limbaugh, even in those states, you see clean energy flourishing. It's amazing. Right.
Well, it's just interesting. You said the utility in Kansas City said they have all of their power plants sized to produce power on the hottest day. Mm-hmm. And so the rest of the time it's sitting idle. So if they can pump it out to let people charge their cars, it reduces the cost for everyone. Mm-hmm. The other thing, DR. Damn, must have swallowed a fly or something. The other thing just noted in passing is that Omaha, Nebraska had a 100-degree temperature day in the middle of February. Did you see that one? Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. It's not, and this is the state that sent Jim Inhofe to he's Oklahoma, isn't he? Anyway, there's a state out there in the middle of the country with a 100-degree day in February. Go figure.
And yet, you do have to ask, and I've said it before, when people see this, you know, again, everybody is responsible ultimately for what the current situation is. When people in Oklahoma see this going from nearly 100 degrees to snow in 72 hours, according to the Weather Channel, these rapid fluctuations, you know, the fracking that takes place in the fracking earthquakes in Oklahoma, at what point do people connect to the dots? You know, at some point, people have got to connect the dots or they're not responsible citizens.
I guess the last thing I would just say in passing, I don't want to jinx it all, but I mean, one of the things that people can take heart from, at least temporarily, is that the new administration, for all of its schizophrenic bouncing around from one thing to another, the dog that has not barked yet is withdrawal from the Paris Accord. Maybe they'll come out tomorrow and back us all up. But all of a sudden, that's kind of gone quiet. Right? And I think that I hope that the corporations that want to be involved in that clean energy market and they want certainty, they don't want the uncertainty of the United States being out of the climate accord. I mean, maybe that's working. Somehow I doubt it. I think that our chief executive is mostly following the image in the mirror, and whatever that guy in the mirror likes is what he likes. But we can only hope. It hasn't happened yet, right?
Yeah, there was a great piece in the LA Times about this where they talked about how major corporations, which, again, according to the Supreme Court, those corporations are people, they may hold the key to preventing Trump from abandoning the Paris Climate Agreement. And again, the article noted the corporate hand in preventing Ohio from getting clean energy standards. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, I wouldn't hold my breath about whether Trump will listen to reason in this regard. But again, you know, if this is a guy who wants to do right by business, well, you know, business wants clean energy.
Yeah. And as I say, we'll see the randomness of the administration. For all I know, they just forgot to sign the executive order. They're going to do it tomorrow morning. But anyway, so let me just remind everybody, we gotta go, DR. But so the MCAN conference is on March 5th at Northeastern University, localenvironmentalaction.org, all one word. Turns out this coming weekend on February 19th, Sunday, down in Copley Place, there is a Facebook page up for a rally for scientists, right? So you can get into Boston Sunday. It's a nice drive. Our train ride, as the case may be. Turns out this is going to be on April 22nd. There'll be another, that's Earth Day, a big march in Boston, the scientists marching in Boston. And then, of course, on April 29th is, we're told, a big march in Washington, D.C., which ought to be fun. Mm-hmm. So there's all that stuff happening. We'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can get us on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, almost any of those mobile podcast providers. So, DL, we'll close where we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the reckless policies of the new administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. Hang in there. Keep persisting. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.